You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer. Hello and welcome to episode 130 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
And Jay.
Hello.
So on today's show, we've got a couple of tasty books to look at. We have got the Codex Drakari, the latest Warhammer 40k codex. So we also have Warzone Caradon, Act 1, The Book of Rust to talk about. This is the first campaign book for Warhammer edition for 40k. And also, we've got a pretty tasty Warhammer preview from last Saturday that we've got to discuss because there was some tasty content in there, wasn't there, guys?
There was, yeah. It was a biggie again.
Yeah, it really was. Biggest Curse City? I don't know. It was still a very good preview seminar, though. So we're going to discuss that a little bit later on in the show. And in honour of which, we'll also be going through our top three models that were revealed during the seminar. So yeah, that's all to come later on, as well as the community top three picks. Before we get to all of that tasty content, though, let's talk about what we've been doing in the hobby this week. So Matt, what have you been up to?
So it's been a quieter week because, you know, we've been doing reviews and stuff, haven't we? But I have based more British Line Infantry. This is just a regular occurrence. Every week just add more British Line Infantry. I've got about 200 left to go. So we're getting there. It'll be fine. I've also built some Infinity stuff, a JSA army using the starter box for them. And they are really cool models, but they are not enjoyable to build. I don't know about you guys, but I'm sure those models are designed to stick as many tiny pieces to your fingers as possible.
I agree. It was one of the reasons that I kind of started Infinity and didn't really progress with it. I didn't enjoy building the models, unfortunately. I mean, I'm more of a fan of working with plastic models anyway than metal. Mm. Yeah, those fiddly little Infinity models, it drove me mad.
Yeah, so they look really nice. Looking forward to painting them, but yeah, building them was no fun.
No, they're a lot smaller than Warhammer 40,000 scale, so they're like more realistically scaled. A bit like Lord of the Rings scale compared to Warhammer Age Sigmar.
Yeah, but Lord of the Rings, I think the way the parts are divided are easiest to stick together.
Yeah, well, Lord of the Rings are still plastic, aren't they? These are all metal, I was going to say.
The metal stuff. Like, on an Infinity model, the hand and the gun, which will be, like, smaller than your thumb, will need sticking to an arm, and, yeah. Don't know whether tweezers is the way to go, I'm not sure.
I think they've improved a little bit. The JSA are not a more recent pack. So I've been building some of the latest tags and stuff and there's only like five pieces, although they are bigger models, arguably. But I think working with metal is always a bit more fiddlier than working with plastic.
Yeah. So, but yeah, looking forward to painting them. I also built and started painting the Starblood Stalkers for Warhammer Underworlds. This is the latest warband that is up for pre-order right now. I did a little review over on the website as well, and they look really, really strong in the game. I think these ones are going to be a fun one to play with. And yeah, started painting these on the stream. So just before we've recorded, I've just been finishing off a couple of bits on the kind of the base colours. And then I may do a cheeky midweek stream as well to finish them off.
Nice. Excellent stuff. Yeah, that'll be fun. I enjoyed them.
Well, go on. Sorry, Dave.
I was going to say, I enjoyed watching you putting the base colours down on the Seraphon in your stream yesterday.
Cheers. Yeah, it was a bit of fun painting some Lizardmen for a change. And I also finished Ava Unit 1 as well. That is now built and, yeah, it's a really cool model.
Yeah, well, more like an action figure in ways, isn't it?
It is, yeah, pretty much a buildable action figure.
That's really cool. Jay, what have you been up to in the hobby this week?
I've also been building and painting Infinity. So I'm on a bit of a burnout from painting Blood Angels. So I thought in this sort of 2-week window we've got before the rest of the elves hit, I'll try and get some of my Infinity warbands painted up. Mm-hmm. So I've been working on one of the tags, which are like the sort of the size of one of the older style dreadnoughts. That's the sort of scale they are, and they're like remote controlled mechs that you include in a warband for some heavy firepower. The one I'm actually painting up is a cutter, so it has like a thermo-optic camouflage system built into it as well, which is pretty cool. So I've been working on that. And then also finalising my test schemes for the Luminef, which I'm pretty happy with now. So it's a bit of a... it's very similar to the box art, but rather than cream, there's more of a neutral sort of greyish-white colour instead. And I've changed the blues from like the Techless blue to a more sea green type blue. And then I've taken the silver off, so it's more gold trim rather than any silver on there as well. So I'm really happy with how he's turned out. So yeah, I'm ready to go now with those. Although I do need to find some grey sear spray, which looks like almost impossible to find anywhere at the moment.
I've got almost a full tin of it, Jay.
Well, I might have to come round, Dave. But I mean, in my experience with using grey sear, is it doesn't go very far. I don't know why. When I was sort of writing down on a piece of paper earlier on today, because yesterday, obviously, we had the announcement that the whole Luminef range are up for pre-order next week. So I was sort of toting up exactly what I'm going to have to buy. So I think one can of grey sear is not going to do it, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, we'll come to that in the news shortly, but it's got to be one of the busiest pre-order weeks ever, especially if you're a Luminef fan, of which you are. Yeah, very busy, few weeks ahead for you, Jay, definitely.
A few weeks.
Excellent stuff. months. Well, I've had another quieter week of hobby. I did review in both written and video form the Warzone Caradron book, the Book of Rust, which was a really enjoyable read. And obviously we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. And I'll put the links to all the stuff we've done this week in the podcast notes as well. So you'll be able to jump straight to those articles. But I have also almost finished my Tallyman for my Death Guard. His base is currently drying. The texture is currently drying on that. I mainly, to be honest, painted a lot of him during your stream, Matt. Up until yesterday, I'd not really done much. Just a busy week. But following the seminar, which obviously we'll discuss shortly, absolutely has fired me up for a certain Imperium army. So I have some Paroxy, is that how you pronounce them?
Taraxi.
God, I'm rubbish at pronouncing them. Paroxy sterilizers to build. I'm rubbish when it comes to pronouncing what I'm named.
It used to be a lot easier when they were just Imperial Guard.
Yeah, I know. Eldar. It wasn't just. But basically, flame bats for the Adeptus Mechanicus is what I've got to build this week, and I'm gonna get them painted as well. And I also have a demon host because Jay very kindly built and painted my Eisenhorn, and he really needs a demon host to summon. I'm not even gonna try and pronounce his name during the game. Jeff the demon host, yeah. Good old Jeff. I've dug that model out because I picked that up when it went made to order a few months ago. Was it before Christmas?
Is he metal then, Dave?
He's metal, yeah.
Is it metal?
Yeah. Yeah. He is metal, yeah.
Good, because Eisenhorn was resin, and oh man, I mean, Matt, you were talking about how bad Infinity models are to build. Finecast is 100 times worse.
Yeah. Oh, it's the flash on the Finecast, isn't it? Man.
You're like, oh, is this part of the model or is this a flat?
Do you know what was really good about this Metal Mini? Because I don't get on with building Metal Minis.
It's just
this Metal Mini has zero pieces to glue together. All I've got to do is put him on the base, and that's it. Because it's the old slotter base.
You'll still glue him to your hand before you manage to glue him to the base, Dave.
Oh, 100%, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So it can still go wrong. But at least I didn't have to glue anything else. It was straight out of the packet. I can be doing with that. And that's it, really. And I think that brings us to a close for this opening segment into the podcast. We have a fair bit to get through, so we're going to take a pause and come back with this week's news. So what do we have in this week's news, Matt?
Well, as we alluded to earlier in the show, we have got a bumper 28 pre-order this week. So, yeah, we'd speculated last week that we might have a two-week release for the Lumineth. But no, it is all dropping in one go. So we have got Broken Realms Techless, the second part of the Broken Realms series. That is £25. This continues the story started in Broken Realms Marathi, which was a cracking read. So I'm absolutely going to have to pick up a copy of this book myself. But in addition to that, it's got all the rules for all the new Lumineth stuff. So Games Workshop have said, if you have the previous Lumineth Battletome, everything that you need is in that book. So you don't need to buy the new Battletome, which is really cool. If you don't already own a Lumineth Battletome, though, a new version of that is out, updated with all these new units as well. So really good that you've got the two options there.
I wonder how much fluff will be. You know, I wonder if as a Lumineth fan, you might want to pick them both up anyway, even if you've got the current Battletome, because of the additional background that might be in the Battletome, but not in Techless Broken Realms.
Yeah, I mean, with the Daughters of Cain, you in the new Battletome, you got kind of like a super compressed version of the Broken Realms story, but not anywhere near as detailed as in the main Broken Realms book. So if I'd say that it'd be more likely that there's going to be stuff in the Broken Realms book that isn't in the Lumineth book rather than the other way around. So we'll see in the coming weeks, won't we? But I've got a feeling that existing players will be able to get away with just the Broken Realms book without missing out on too much. But really? That's another book to carry around with you then, isn't it? So you might just want one Battletome with everything in, maybe. And then we've got an absolute assortment of miniatures as well. So we've got the Law Seeker at £18.50. We've got the Caligrave at £18.50. The Banner Blade at £21. The Star Shard Ballista at £31.50. Lyrior Ulthrail, which is the mounted dude, for £34.50. The Hurricane Wind Chargers for £39.50. Severith at £34.50, which surprises me. I thought he was going to be more than that. The Blade Lord.
He's a bit smaller than we think.
I think he is a little bit smaller. Yeah, I mean, similar to Zygvald's, kind of not as big as he maybe seemed in some of the original images. The Blade Lords at £36.50, Elania and Elithar at £29, the Wind Mage at £23.50, and the Shrine Luminor at £35. On the whole, I don't think they're horrendous prices.
No, I mean, especially that Shrine Luminor, that really surprised me.
Yeah, whether we've just got, you know, desensitized, because I know the, what are they called? Your cow-headed warriors.
The Alarith.
The Alarith seemed really expensive at the time, but I think they are actually £36.50 is probably the same price as the Blade Guard, aren't they?
Blade Lord.
Yeah, maybe just the Swordmaster aesthetic I prefer, but it's certainly nothing like completely crazy in there, which is good, because we thought some of the Slaanesh prices were a little bit on the high side, so good to see that they've reined it in a little bit with these. If you are looking for a bargain, though, there are four new Broken Realms boxes coming out. They did the same with Marathi, and they are basically in the Broken Realms Marathi book, there were themed attachments you could take for some additional benefits, and obviously a nice box where you can get some kind of discount as well. So you've got the Plague Host, which is £55, and you get £75 worth of minis in it. So you've got two boxes of Plague Bearers, a Sloppity Bowel Piper, which is still the best unit name ever, and you get, I can't remember what he's called, another Plague Bearer character. So really good start for anyone wanting to start a Nurgle Force, Dave. We've also got the War Magi, which is a set of two of the what are they called, Arc Luminor,
the Hurricanum.
Kind of big Hurricanum. Yeah, so you get two of them. They would cost you £70 separately. This box cost you £50, so another good saving there. You've got the Hell Court, which comes with about 20 ghouls. You get the new Arch Regent, is he called? The big guy with the wings that was in the Skaven Battle Box. And you get a trio of the Vargulf boxes. And again, that is £50, and you get £72.50 worth of models, which is really cool. And then the best value one is the Dreadlance. You get a Liege Cavalos and two boxes of Ossiarch Cavalry. It'd cost you £100 to get that all separately. this box costs you 70. So if you want to do a cavalry heavy Ossiok Bone Reapers force, I'd definitely look at, you could pick up two of these and have a good chunk of a cavalry army.
Yeah, the battle line as well. So you could do that cavalry. This one was quite tempting as well. I mean, I've already got one box of cavalry and the Liege Cavalos, but I could always build the second Liege as the name character. Can't remember his name. But the other one for me there was the Nurgle one was quite interesting.
Yeah, they look pretty good. I quite like these boxes. I picked up the Dark Elves one. And that had quite a good discount as well. So, yeah, really cool. Also up for pre-order this week, we have got the second Khalgar comic. We have got the White Scars model from Bandai that we talked about last week. And about a year after we originally saw them, the Forge World Wordbearers are up for pre-order as well.
Oh, man, yeah. Have the Night Lords come out yet?
The Night Lords have come out. Oh, yes, yeah. They have.
Yeah. I remember seeing those word bears because are they plastic or are they resin?
They are resin.
Oh, that surprised me because we did think that they could be plastic. Okay.
We speculated they could be in some kind of starter box or something. That's wrong. No, they're just resin miniatures. So yeah, and that is all the pre-orders. That's a lot of stuff for pre-order in 1 week. Obviously, no sign of Cursed City yet. It wouldn't surprise me if that's the following week.
Yeah, I think it's very, very soon.
Yeah, it's. I'm looking forward to it. And while on the Vampire front, every Monday Games Workshop have been showing off new models as part of their New Model Monday. And today we saw Annika, the Thirsting Blade. She's let herself go since Challenge Annika, hasn't she?
yeah, definitely.
Such a weird and sinister looking model, this one, isn't it?
It'll give me nightmares. I'm not buying it because it's the scariest model in the Warhammer universe.
She's freaky. Beautiful. I love her very much. I can't wait to paint her.
And that brings us to the close for this week's news. Quite a bit there, but let's not forget there was also a Warhammer preview, which we're going to talk about in the not too distant future. But before we touch upon that, we are going to look at two books that we have in our hands. For this week, they're up for pre-order, and we're going to kick off with Codex Drakari, and that's coming up next. So we have the latest Codex for Warhammer 9th edition. We have got the Drakari. Jay, I believe you have the copy in your hands. You've obviously done quite an in-depth write-up and video review of this book, but do you want to take us through a few key points?
Yeah, well, I mean, I did the write-up. Matt's done the video on the Sprues and Brews website, so you can check that out, yeah. I was really looking forward to this book. I'm a big Eldar fan, as you know, and, okay, it's not Craftworld, it's not Harquin, it's the Drukhari, which I don't have a Drukhari. I mean, I don't play Drukhari, but I'm still interested to, you know, read up about them. The first thing that really jumped out at me about this book is the quality of the artwork in here. I think I messaged you guys when I picked it up. I was just blown away by the absolute awesome artwork throughout this book. It's really, really good. It's a shame I can't say the same about the lore. So the first third of the book is given over to lore, and I was really hoping, and I think we'd spoken about this before we got hold of the Codex, for some really interesting plot developments. What are the Drukhari doing now? How are they reacting to the events that are happening in the galaxy today with the Great Rift, the Pariah Nexus, the Indomitus Crusade? What are the Dark Eldar doing? There's not really anything in this book that goes into any detail about any of that. It's more just, this is what Dark Eldar society is like. These are what the unit's like. If you're an existing Dark Eldar player and you've been playing the game for a while, all of that's not really new to you. So that was a bit disappointing. But, I mean, the stuff that's here is very, very good. And if you're new to Dark Eldar, you're going to enjoy reading through all of this background. in terms of the sort of gaming content of the book, I'll just touch on the army building. Now, the amount of army building rules in this book is massive. It's sort of beats what we saw in the Dark Angels Codex, where, if you remember, we had the Death Wing, the Raven Wing, the Green Wing type army composition that you could build. This surpasses that completely. So you've got all sorts of rules for building witch cults, cabals, homunculi covens, combining them all into real space raids. And then each of those individual factions have got a plethora of obsessions,
which are like your sort of chapter traits, warlord traits, relics. There's always, you can upgrade your archons and succubus characters and your homunculi. There's so much there. Really, I think no two Dark Elder armies would ever need look the same using the army construction rules out of this book. It took me a few read-throughs.
It's definitely the most customizable book that we've seen yet, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And it really sort of gives me high hopes for codexes further down the line. Yeah, I think this is, you're right, Matt, definitely the most in-depth army building sort of capability in this codex than what we've seen in any of the other codexes. But it does take a couple of read-throughs. I don't know how you found it, Matt, but I had to read through all the different things a few times to get my head around it, which is no complaint. It's good to have all those options.
I suppose I had the advantage of having already read your review before I got to the video, so I had a little bit of a head start. But it's really interesting that the way the Real Space Raid works, where essentially you take three fixed HQs that you've got to take, and then one kind of troops choice from each of the three different kind of Dark Eldar factions. But outside of that, you've got freedom to pick whatever you like. So, yeah, I really like that. It gives you some cool customizability without restricting you too much.
Yeah. And if you do choose to do that, you get extra options where you can upgrade certain characters in your army. Your warlord gets an extra aura ability, which affects units that it might not ordinarily affect if it was taken in a sort of mono cult sort of detachment. So, yeah, there's a lot to play around with. As you'd come to expect, tons of stratagems. There's a bucket loads of relics and warlord traits like I've mentioned in this book. So, yeah, lots and lots of options. I'm not going to go into detail about all of the data sheets. One, I'm not a Dark Elder player, so I can't really comment on whether a unit is now better than it used to be. I don't know. A lot of the weapons have been upgraded, I've noticed. A lot of the units have extra attacks and have been tweaked slightly. There's a couple of new army abilities in here, like Blade Artists, which on a 6 to hit gives you an extra AP on your attack. So there have been changes. I think the Power from Pain and Combat Drugs, which obviously have been a staple in Dark Elder armies since 5th edition, is it? Or 6th edition? 4th edition, maybe. They're back in this book with a few changes. So I think one of the most notable ones that I spotted was the Power from Pain, the second turn you get to advance and charge with your units. But like I say, I'm not a Dark Elder player, so I can't really comment too much on how well represented the data sheets are in this book.
I think every profile and weapon has had a tweak of some description, which is cool. For the better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think, like I say, I've noticed things have had extra attacks at the very least. And the rules for Lilith, really, woof. She's amazing.
7 attacks, mental.
But my favourite part of this book, and I mean, it's my favourite part of most codexes that we review nowadays, but especially so with this one, is the Crusade. And this really sets the bar for what I'm expecting from Crusade rules for other codexes now. So the premise is very, very simple. So you're basically, your Crusade is telling the story of your Dark Elder character as he rises from the bottom of Commerce Society to the very top. And to that end, you pick one of your HQ options, your character models from your army, and they become an ascendant lord, and you're sort of following their progress as they rise up the different ranks through in the Dark City. And basically what you do is each of your battles becomes a raid for resources, a raid for slaves, a raid for technology and treasures. And at the end of every game that you have, every battle that you have, you roll a dice, and on a 4+, you gain some raid spoils points, which you then take back to Comera. And you collect these raid spoil points over the course of your crusade. And then what you can do is you can trade these. When you get back to Comra, you can trade these raid spoil points for two things. You can trade them for territory to claim dominance over certain areas of the Dark City. And there's two tables with 66 options on each table for all sorts of areas in Comra, like Hope's Horizon or the Gorloop Gauntlet, or the Flensing Ground, the Hall of Hooks, the Splinter Forge. There's so many cool areas. And each area has a trait. So there's weapon forges, toxin distilleries, arenas, scourge spires, incubi shrines. And you basically spend your raid spoil points to claim these territories. And then these territories give you abilities. So, for example, if you have a weapons forge area in your sort of domain, once per battle, you can use a war gear stratagem for 0 command points. If you've managed to claim a gang territory, You can your Reaver and Hellion units in your army gain extra experience points during the game. If you've got a hold over an Incubi Shrine, each Incubi unit gets extra experience points when they're playing in your game. So, I mean, that's just really, really cool. And you can almost, like, draw out a little map of this sort of domain that you control as you're going into a game and expand it. I really like that. What you can also do is you can spend your spores of battle to sort of either bribe or provision the services of some other denizens of Comora. So you may want to go to a homunculi and get him to sort of enhance one of your Kabbalite warrior units, for example. Or you might want to steal some treasure from another rival Dark Jukai Lord's sort of arsenal. There's all sorts of different things that you can use these spoils of battle for. And my favourite, which is just, whoever thought of this is just such a cool idea. If you're having a crusade game against another Drukhari player, you can actually use one of your spoils of battle to assert your authority over that player and steal one of their territories, and they get added to your territories that you own then. Which, I mean, that interplay between different players, because up until now, a crusade has been quite a personal thing. The effects of the crusade, your characters leveling up, your units leveling up, getting battle scars, is sort of independent of anything else. You can play a random crusade game against, you know, in a pickup group at a Games Workshop store, for example, and there's not really any interaction between the two crusade systems of those players. Not the case if you're a Drukhari player, which is amazing. That's such a cool idea.
Yeah, reading it myself, I thought, how cool would it be to do a Drukhari crusade where every player has got a Drukhari force, you draw up a map of Comora and have all of those 66 territories as locations on that map, and they can only be claimed once. So then you're then going to start taking the territories from each other. I think that'd be really fun.
Yeah, that really plays into the character of the Dark Eldar sort of force, the faction, which is really, really cool. I mean, I hope we see more of this. I mean, like I could see like a Grey Knights crusade interacting with a Chaos Demons crusade, for example. So yeah, I mean, we're only, what is this, the fourth real codex, isn't it? I guess
Space Marines, Necrons,
Death Guard,
and yeah, the other ones have been codex supplements, haven't they?
Yeah, so we're not that far into all the codexes yet, so they're probably still testing the waters, sort of learning about Crusade and what's capable. So I'm hoping it only gets better from this point on, but I mean, it's a great start so far. And one last thing about the Crusade system, though. So Dark Eldar society is very cutthroat. You know, you always have to look over your shoulder. You can't trust anyone. And that is also represented in the Crusade system. So every time you claim a stake in a new territory, there's a possibility that another rival Drukhari lord, or even Vect himself, will make an assassination attempt on you. You know, put you back in your place, clip your wings a little bit. So you have to take a test each time you attempt this. If you fail that test, your aspiring ascendant lord receives a battle scar, but these battle scars are quite they're a lot more impactful than regular battle scars in that they don't reduce your crusade points level, so it's a real disadvantage really with one of these battle scars on you. But again, that just plays into the sort of character of Dark Elder society and that sort of ruthless cutthroat sort of rise to the top that it's trying to emulate. So yeah, 11 out of 10 for the crusade content in this book. And then one final point, with any Crusade system, you get new weapon enhancements, battle scars, that sort of thing, requisitions, all that's in here as well. I won't go into too much detail that. You can check out the article on the Sprues and Brews website where I go through every single thing you can do in this Crusade section. But I do like the Crusade relics. So there's some sort of like, there's only three of them, but they have, they're sort of like quite nostalgic. The Master Clone Field, for example, reminds me of the old Clone Field you used to get when the Dark Elder were first sort of redone. I think it was like 4th or 5th edition, wasn't it? 5th edition, maybe. Mm. So I think they've really thought about the relics, the Crusade relics in this book as well, and sort of tied them into the history of the Dark Elder force. So that's it, really. Like I say, I don't really want to go into too much detail about the different data sheets because I'm not really in a position to comment on them, I don't think. But if you want to read more, go to the website and watch Matt's video as well.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, if it wasn't for something that was previewed on Saturday, I'd have been very tempted to pick up this book, I think, and start a bit of a witch cult. I think that'd be really, really cool.
Well, I mean, it's a good book for us three, because you could do the Witch Cult, Matt could do whatever the Cabalite or the Homunculi coven, and I could take the other one, see? And then you've got three rival sort of factions there.
I think that'd be really fun. For a little 1,000-point crusade campaign, I think it'd be great fun.
Yeah.
I think that'd be brilliant fun. Yeah, really, really good. Excellent stuff. Thanks for that, Jay. All the links will be in the podcast notes, so you'll be able to check that out. We do have another book to discuss, so we're going to take a slight pause and come back with that. Warzone Caradon is the second book that we're going to be looking at on this week's podcast. And this is our first campaign book that has been released since the launch of 9th edition for Warhammer 40k. This is Act 1, the Book of Rust. I don't think we actually know how many acts they're planning on, do we?
No, we don't. We don't.
Matt's going to start us off with this one because... I mean, we've both read this, Matt. You picked up a few more things in the sort of lore part of this book than I did. So do you want to take it from there?
Yeah. So basically, first of all, if you're into 40k lore, pick up this book because similar to how Broken Realms expanded the lore massively for AOS, this book's all new stuff. I suppose in contrast to what Jay was saying about the Drakari book, this is all new advancing plot, which is really cool. And I guess that kind of points to that kind of stuff being in these supplements rather than the codexes, which I guess is fair enough if that's what you want. And basically, yeah, this tells the tale of Abaddon's planned assault on the Caradon system. In particular, he seems to have his eyes set on the Forge World of Metallica. Now, we've got a few Horus Heresy parallels here, because obviously if the Warmaster can take a Forge World, that suddenly supplements his forces, you know, infinitely. We know that in the previous Vigilus campaign, there was an astronomic projection of the Vengeful Spirit heading to Terra. So could we see parallels to the Horus Heresy here? So basically, we've got a highly defended Forge World that has got various warp points nearby that themselves are defended from. And Abaddon has kind of assembled a crack team to take this planet with a knife to the heart, as the Sons of Horus are wont to do. And his favoured champion to do this for him is the Traveller himself, Typhus. So we know that Typhus has got a bit of a funny relationship with Mortarion, and in this book alludes to the fact that he is only taking orders from Abaddon now, which may cause some conflict in the wider Death Guard. In addition to this, we've got a new character who seems to be kind of a loyal servant of Abaddon, who is leading the kind of demon engine side. There's a big Dark Mechanicum contingent in this force that's heading. And then there's also various Alpha Legion and Thousand Suns and various kind of splinter factions of Chaos who basically are just trying to cause disruption across the system to draw out the defences before Typhus essentially leads Terminus Est straight to Metallica. And yeah, it was really, really fun reading this. Loads of mentions to units that we haven't seen before. So there's mention of Scutari Marshals. We've never heard of them before. We might come to them in a bit later on. There's also quite a lengthy section describing Heptus Kelleng, the Fabricator General of Metallica. Now, Fabricator Generals have been in the lore, certainly in the Heresy a lot, but we've never had a Fabricator General model or reference to them in a codex recently. Again, due to something that we're going to talk about a little bit later, I've got suspicions that this is teeing it up, because it goes into quite a lot of detail of what he looks like. He is essentially a tech priest the size of a super heavy tank, with various mechanandrites and big engines and stuff coming out the back, and that'd be a really cool model if we got it one day, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be.
So yeah, and this guy doesn't mess around. I mean, we're talking about irradiating planets to kill all the biological elements, because at first he thinks that there's weird kind of psychic manifestations and weird stuff going on, and his very kind of mechanical mind says that, okay, this is a flaw with all the biological elements of this planet, so let's just irradiate the entire planet to take out all life. He's not a very nice guy, is he?
Oh, no, he's not, no. But then I suppose if you, you know, you they've got a big role to play, you know, he's got to keep his forge world protected against all manner of things, so can't be a nice guy.
No, and he's not alone. There's some Astra Militarum units who are helping and some Space Marines. Things are going pretty well. The Imperium forces have got the upper hand until Typhus essentially brings about a ritual that he's been working on. He seems to have made a deal with certain powers of the warp, let's say. And we all know how well that turns out all the time when you make pacts with all four gods. But yeah, demons from all four factions essentially just roll over the planet in an endless wave. And him and his acolytes enact a ritual to tear a hole in real space. The saw, they call it. And this is expanding at like an exponential rate. They don't know, is this just going to overwhelm Metallica entirely? What it does, we're not quite sure, but it's certainly not good. The Dark Mechanicum are mentioned so many times throughout the book, and towards the kind of climax where things aren't looking great for the forces of the Imperium, basically they've taken over the New Sphere. The various Skitarii and Servitor forces on the planet have been taken over by like scrap code, and the Dark Mechanicum priests are drawing data demons from the churning warp of this saw in order to use for the ground assault that is no doubt coming in the next book. Traitor Guard are also mentioned quite heavily, so there are a few things in here that I do wonder, are these teeing up things that we'll see in future codexes? Because, you know, the Dark Mechanicum have been a thing for a long time, and outside the Negavolt cultists in Blackstone Fortress, we haven't got any plastic miniatures for them. No. This could easily be something that they slot into a new Chaos Space Marine force rather than the standalone faction as well, because let's not forget we've got the various demon engines and stuff already, and I think the forces of Chaos are a bit more ragtag. I don't think you'd see a full purely Dark Mechanicum contingent come in without being supported by traitor legionnaires and the lost and the damned, essentially. So really exciting from that point of the kind of stuff it's teasing. I thoroughly enjoyed the story. I don't know, what did you think, Dave?
I thought it was great. I mean, I alluded to in the review quite a lot that I was comparing it to Psychic Awakening, because I read quite a few of those, and they felt very much like short stories that didn't really have an impact on the greater universe that is 40K, whereas this is clearly building up to stuff that's going to be game-changing as we continue into 9th edition. And it was just really well written as well. Like... It really had me gripped, and there's so many different elements and different twists and stuff that, yeah, I really enjoyed reading it.
Yeah, there was a vast improvement from the Psychic Awakening books, and I'd say if it's the standard we get from these supplements, I mean, we saw it in Broken Realms 2, we mentioned, it's worth buying these supplements then for the lore, which is a big deal for some people. You know, some people aren't too fussed on, you know, having all the stratagems and stuff from a competitive side, but they want to read an advancing story. This book gives you a reason to pick it up for that, which I think is definitely a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, really, really enjoyed it. Another sort of key component to the book, which I think a few people kind of overseen a little bit. Like, I know we'll get to like some of the army rule stuff in a second, but and I don't know if you'll agree with me here, Matt, but I really enjoyed when they actually started breaking down how running a campaign based on what's going on in this book, how it works, like in the phases, having a campaign master and your legendary missions. Would you agree? Yeah. Did you like how that was set up?
You know what, personally, I'd rather more of that and less of the extra stratagems and stuff, personally, because that kind of, it's like the, I mean, I'm a big fan of the House of Books for Necromunda, and it's more like that, isn't it? Resources for running cool games.
Yeah, exactly that. So this breaks down, whereas before, you know, I'm pretty sure in old campaign books, it's like, you just play out these missions. This is so much more about, you know, try and nominate somebody to be a campaign master to set out how the campaign's going to run, the length of time you're going to run your campaign over, how you're going to score your campaign, how you're going to kind of split it into phases and then score each phase.
And stuff like that, it sounds like you could easily translate to a tournament weekend or a tournament day.
You could. There's an element of the book where it suggests the campaign master might want to give each player a secret order, whether they get bonus points, whether they achieve it or not. That's really fun when you get, I suppose it comes back to that, the Dark Angels one. There comes a point where you're like, hang on a second, what's this person up to mid-game?
Yeah.
And this all works great with Crusade, which the book picks up on, because you know it knows that a lot of people are playing Crusade now. So it integrates, and you don't have to, but you can integrate Crusade really easily. And the book gives you lots of new Crusade relics and stuff, Crusade battle traits. And further on from, you know, once you finish this campaign, say you run this campaign for a couple of weeks, your units that have taken part in this campaign and have unlocked a badge, which is basically an additional keyword, they can carry over those relics, just that unit in battle traits, into your broader crusade sort of overarching campaign, as it were, which I thought was really good. You know, could you imagine, Jay, maybe having this unit of intercessors, which is we might have run a small campaign based on this book, and you've got this one particular unit of intercessors that's done really well, and they become like kind of veterans of this particular war zone. So they've got traits to acknowledge that, and you take them out into other Crusade games. You're like, well, you know, these guys, they're called this because of what's gone on in this previous campaign, which I think that's exactly what we wanted at Crusade, wasn't it?
Yeah,
there's very much a feeling of, you touched on it earlier, Jay, where Crusades are standalone. You don't really get, your kind of order of battle doesn't get affected too much by other players. I think the idea with these books is that you play all your games, you know, wherever, at the local shop, but then you can get a group of friends together, play through this narrative campaign all together, and obviously there is some impact on each other. And then once it's finished, you can then carry on with the kind of wider universe stuff going on.
Well, that's it to the next campaign. Yeah. Mm. I mean, that's what a Space Marine Army would do. There'd be one war zone, then there'd be another war zone. You'd have the campaign badges from the previous war zone. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. And there's some really cool missions as well. I don't know what you thought of the legendary missions. One of my favourite ones is Route on Orkhurum. Mm. Probably butchered that name. But essentially, it's the scenario is built around a fighting retreat. So, lore-wise, it's when it's all hit the fan and it dawns on the Imperium defenders that let's get out of Dodge. And basically, the defender will kind of, the border be split kind of down the long ways. On the short edge of the table is the attacker, and just 9 inches away is the defender. So already at the start of the game, the attackers are within charge range. The defenders have got to work their way back across the board and then do an escape action to exfiltrate the table. Meanwhile, the attackers are just rampaging up towards them. That seems so cinematic, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And it comes with its own set of rules as you're playing the game, and your its own kind of objectives as well, to complete the mission. And these are kind of designed to fit into whatever order you want your campaign to run in. But I think they make sense as either a beginning of the phase or end of the phase kind of mission, which was really, really cool. So yeah, I thought it was a really strong part of the book, and I think it's very easy to overlook it and kind of just read the lore and then jump straight to the army rules, which we'll talk about next, because with all these supplements we tend to get some new rules for factions, and that's exactly the same in this book. So this is split into two sections. You've got a couple of Army of Renowns, which are ways of building your army. And then you've got actual codex supplements. So these are like mini versions of, say, your codex supplement Ultramarines, Jay, or stuff like that. And they are extra warlord traits, extra stratagems and things like that. If we take the Armies of Renown first, you get three of them within this book. You've got one for the Adeptus Mechanicus called the Mechanicus Defense Cohort. You've got a Freeblade one for if you want to take an army purely of Freeblade Knights, which is a cool idea. And you've also got, and the one that's been fleshed out the most in the book, the Terminus Est Assault Force, which is basically Typhus's own regiment, would you say?
Yeah, his own army, kind of away from the influence of Mortarion. So very much the, what's it called, the Walking Plague theme.
Yeah, yeah. So my original concern was these were going to be very similar to Specialist Detachments from Vigilance, which were fun, but I think they suffered from balance issues, didn't they? And there wasn't really any downsides to them aside from costing some CP. Instead, what Armies of Renown do, which can be used in all the various like match play or crusade or whatever, there are some heavy restrictions, but on the flip side, you gain some bonuses. So I'm not going to go through all of them, but if you take, for example, Typhus's Terminus Est Assault Force, you cannot take any vehicles at all. So anything with the vehicle keyword, you cannot include in your army building. So what we're talking there, Plague Burst Crawlers, Bloat Drones, I think they've got the vehicle keyword. So you can't take any of that, which instantly takes away a lot of the heavy weapon options in the Death Guard army, because you can't take Havocs or anything with the Death Guard. You can't take Mortarion. For reasons Matt's discussed in the lore, Typhus doesn't get on with him, has daddy issues. And your play company has to be the Harbingers, because that's Typhus's play company. If Typhus is in your army, he has to be your warlord, because he's the boss. But what you do get is you get to be able to deep strike your Plague Marines 9 inches away from enemy units, obviously using the strategic reserves CP costs. And then you also unlock loads of other cool stuff. So you unlock loads of new stratagems, you unlock a whole new lore of psychic powers, and a whole bunch of cool relics. What did you think about these, Matt?
So yeah, if you've played Middle-earth strategy battle game, it works very much like the Legendary Legions, where there are big penalties, and it's not going to be for everyone, but it lets you take a thematic army with some cool stuff. So in a Terminus Est Assault Force, you can shoot into units of Poxwalkers, for example.
Yeah, I think that was my favourite one. I think it's 2 CP. But yeah, you throw a unit of Poxwalkers at something, tie them up, and your Blight Lord Terminator is like, well, I don't care for Poxwalkers, you know, 2 CP. I'll just shoot into that unit. That's fine. So yeah, I thought it was really cool. Now, we will round up at the end of this segment, because obviously the Death Guard book wasn't that long ago. This is kind of additional Death Guard content. I can kind of get it with these Armies of Renown, because they're themed around the war
zone. The campaign, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. And they do have a lot of restrictions, which is fair enough. It is another book if you play Death Guard and you want to play this Army of Renown, but I kind of get it. Then you've got the Codex Supplements. So the Codex Supplements, I think we've got three of these. Yeah, we've got three of these. We've got House Raven for the Imperial Knights. They're obviously... We're currently using the 8th edition Codex for Imperial Knights. We don't know how far that book is away. It could be this year. It could be next year. But you've got two pages of House Raven content. So you've got a load of extra, I think you've got 8 stratagems. You've got some extra warlord traits, and you've got an extra few relics. You've got Forge World Metallica. Again, same kind of thing. You've got extra warlord traits from Metallica, stratagems, relics, you know, pretty cool. But then you also have the Cult of Strife, which is a witch cult one for the Drakari. So I asked, actually, when I was reviewing the book, Jay, I asked you if the Cult of Strife made an appearance in the Drakari Codex, which It does, but I think you only get a page, don't you?
No, you don't even get a page, Dave. So you'll get one obsession, which is like your chapter trait. You'll get one stratagem that you can use for cult of strife. You get one warlord trait and one relic.
Yeah. So in this codex supplement, which is within this Warzone book, you've got an extra 3 warlord traits to choose from. You've got, I think it's 6 relics, and then I think you've got about 8, again, stratagems. Now, we know, and we've spoken a lot about on this podcast, that the release schedule has been heavily punctured by COVID and other worldwide sort of things that are going on. So it just so happened that the Warzone book has dropped exactly the same time as the Drakkari Codex. But do we feel that this Codex supplement was needed now? Should it have been in the Codex?
Absolutely, yeah. The supplement, I mean, Metallica, as we'll say later on in the show, AdMech have got a book out next month. Drakkari have got a book out same day as this on Saturday. Knights, I'm assuming, are probably not going to be that far away because they feature in this war zone. I do object to these Codex supplements being in this book. The kind of Army of Renown stuff, I get that because that's tied into the campaign, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What's also kind of interesting is from are these match play legal? Well, technically they are, because what determines what something's legal or not is the mission pack, and the current mission pack says you can use all supplements and codexes. Now it could be that we get to chapter approved 2021 being released and it has a little blurb in there saying you cannot use an Army of Renown in a 2021 game, for example.
See, yeah. I think I wouldn't mind if the Dark Eldar book come out today and then this campaign came out 18 months into the edition cycle. It breathes a fresh lease of life into the Drakkari Codex. It probably gives Games Workshop opportunity to retune some of the Drakkari Codex against codexes that have come out. But for something like this to come out the same day, okay, it might just be the same day because of Dave said we've got this COVID going on, but it wouldn't have been too big a gap either way, I don't think. It wouldn't have been at most three months. I think that's wrong. I think all of this should have been in the Drakkari Codex.
I think what it is, obviously we've had quite a few Codex supplements already for 9th edition because the various Space Marine chapters, the big ones, the Blood
Angels. I think Drakkari's like 6th or 7th Codex that's come out, yeah, if you include the Space Marine supplements.
Yeah. They're their own book, so you're paying £20, whatever, £25 for a book that gives you a lot of extra lore about that particular, the Death Watch, for example, and all their Special Rules Crusade content. You're having to buy I think this retails at about £35.
Yeah, this is more expensive than the Codex, and it's got 3 pages of Drakkari content.
So if you take, for example, I mentioned earlier on that if I did go in for Drakkari, it would probably be for a witch cult. And it could be the Cult of Strife that I end up settling on. I would have to have this book and the Codex from the word go to be able to run it properly.
And you compare that to what they're doing with Broken Realms Techless, I suppose it's the same, isn't it? I was going to say Broken Realms Techless you can buy if you already own the Codex, but here it's a new Codex, isn't it? It's not as if it's the old edition of the Drakkari Codex, so you have to buy both, don't you? So it's not like Broken Realms Techless.
Yeah.
Well, that's a shame.
It's a funny one because we like having new content, and I've never been too bothered about having maybe 2 books, but from the word go, that just stings a little bit. The book does include a code so you can unlock all this content on the app. So that's good. You'll be able to still build all your army lists and have access to all the Cult of Strife stuff within the app. So you're not having to rely on the physical copies of the book. I think it was a bit of a shame. And I think it will take away from the pros that me and Matt have just discussed about the book.
Yeah, I think you can easily have those couple of pages in the Codex or not even have them in there and have more of that kind of narrative campaign stuff in there. I think could take away the sting of feeling you have to buy this £35 book in addition to the Codex.
Do you know what, actually? This has just come to me. What I would have preferred is maybe in 6-7 months time, a codex supplement for the Drakari in general. So you maybe you've got a more expanded Kabbalite cult, the Cult of Strife, and then do you know what I mean? So you've got a book that is for Drakari players that expands.
That's what I mean, because I mean, this is it now. Drakari probably won't get anything again now for the rest of ninth. That this is it. They've had their codex, they've had their campaign supplement, and that's it now. So I mean, we've only just scratched the surface of the codexes that need to be revisited for ninth. So you know, there's always an element of power creep, or where, you know, like Crusade gets refined and made even better, and you've got to wait now for potentially 10th edition before Drakari get.
I don't know about that. I think we could potentially see another codex supplement for another part of Drakari within 9th edition. I don't know.
I mean, if you look at 8th edition, they only got one codex. Craft World Elder only got one codex. Yeah,
I'm not talking about a codex, really. I'm talking about a supplement. I could potentially see another Drakari codex supplement for a different, you know, say Kabbalites, for a Kabbalite force, later in the 9th edition run, especially at the rate that the releasing codexes and campaign books and stuff. I mean, that's my personal opinion.
If this is like a pattern, so next time we get, say, Grey Knight's codex and then a Grey Knight codex supplement in the campaign, Caradon Part 2 that comes out, and then it's Gene Steel Cults after that, and Gene Steel, I don't know whether there'll be an opportunity to slot Drakari back into that. Maybe they will, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think from this we've got a few factions teed up. Obviously, we know the Sisters of Battle are coming out soon. They're in this book, but they feature more in the lore, but not in the rules content. The Grey Knights are mentioned in the lore. The Demons are mentioned in the lore. So those three are contenders for the Act Two, aren't they? And presumably those codex will release around that. It will be a little bit frustrating if each of those books again has a couple of pages in Act Two.
Yeah, it's a funny one. But I wouldn't let that ruin what actually is an enjoyable book. The only other point I'm going to make about this book, again, it's a slightly negative one. The last two pages of the book are for additional Crusade content for the Death Guard called Virulent Gifts, which are basically like one use only items that you can spend Verulent's points on that you gain through your Death Guard Crusade to purchase these one-use items, has absolutely no place really in this book and should have been in the Death Guard Codex.
Well, I'd argue out the same day as this, and we haven't been sent a copy of this to review, but there's Plague Purge, which is a specific Crusade book for the Death Guard, similar to the Beyond the Veil book for the Necrons. Yeah. Surely those two pages could have been in that mission pack.
Yeah, you're right. So I mean, I'll be picking up a copy of that when it's released, so I'll be able to tell you what's actually in that book. But yeah, it's funny. I don't know, is it a space issue? I'm not sure. It just seemed completely randomly slotted in the back of this book. Odd. Very, very, very odd. But yeah, that's the book. I think we've kind of covered all the key points there. Again, in the podcast notes, you'll be able to find a link to the video and the written review of the book, so you'll be able to check that out. And that's up for pre-order now, coming out on Saturday. We're going to catch our breath, take a pause, and come back with this week's Warhammer preview. So last Saturday, we had yet another Warhammer preview online to watch, and it was packed full of Warhammer goodness. Now, we are going to go through everything that was revealed during the show. We'll perhaps not go into quite as much detail as we normally would, because we have been talking about the Drakari and the Warzone book, but we could not let this online preview pass us by without mentioning it, especially if you're a fan of vampires, Matt.
Yes, well, I am absolutely a fan of vampires, as we've seen in the last couple of previews. And Faith and Damnation was the theme of the preview show, and we kind of assumed some of the stuff that we'd get. There was quite a lot of stuff that we didn't predict, though, wasn't there? So obviously Cursed City is coming out, and we're in Cursed City itself. There's quite a lot of redone vampire stuff. We'd seen the White King on the last show, and there's been a couple of vampires that we've seen, but I don't think any of us expected the massive range refresh that we saw on the preview. So Blood Knights got redone with an absolutely gorgeous new kit. We've got new Deadwalker zombies. We've got new Death Rattle skeletons. We've got new fell bats. I mean, I mean, certainly the two infantry kits, I kind of thought they'd keep the old ones, but then have the new models in Cursed City as an alternate sculpt, maybe. But the fact that they're standalone boxes, and presumably there's going to be quite a lot of stuff getting released as well. We previously saw the Rat Prince a couple of weeks ago, and then Annika today on Warhammer Community. Plus, we've got the Warhammer Underworld vampires, which all seems very timed well to drop into an army really nicely. Few things on the front cover of the Battle Tome as well that we saw. There's what looks like a new dire wolf kind of skulking around, and also a vampire dragon with a completely different aesthetic to all the other ones that we've seen for the vampires. Mm. I've got a feeling this may be an entire range refresh.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're right.
I think the kits that are shared with the Flesh Eater Courts will remain as Flesh Eater Courts only. So the Monstrous Infantry, I think, will stay as just Flesh Eater Courts, and then the vampires then get the Varg Skiers from Underworlds. It's I'm super excited. I don't know about you guys. Are you liking the look of the Soul Blight Gravelords?
I most certainly could see myself at some point in the future having a Rat Prince led vampire army.
Excellent.
I think they've done the sort of. What I like about it is that it is just it's very similar to the existing vampire counts, or at least what the vampire counts used to look like in Warhammer Fantasy, but obviously with just awesome new sculpts. So they've not done like a Caradhron Overlords or Fire Slayers or Idenef Deepkin sort of Age of Sigmar sort of style to them, that these would look really nice on square bases.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they've done the opposite, haven't they? With Age of Sigmar, they split all the Death Faction into little sub-factions that the Legions and the Gash book tried to address that a little bit, but you still had a little bit of a keyword problem in constructing your force. This pretty much takes them back to vampire camps, doesn't it? Yeah. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing.
No. I could definitely see myself with maybe more zombies than... I love the new zombies than than skeletons. But you've got that flexibility in how you want your army to be.
Yeah, they allude to the fact that there's lots of different ways of building your army. So, you know, they said if you wanted a Blood Knight heavy army, you can do that. And I know that's something that would appeal for you, Jay. So I suppose, similar to we've just been talking about the Drakkari, if this is a book that lets you do the undead army of your dreams, then that's definitely a good thing in my book.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah. So obviously we don't know when this is out, but they don't tend to show stuff out too far. Obviously we've got the entire Lumineth range up for pre-order next week, so this is probably soon after, certainly by June. So yeah, exciting times. We also got a tease for the fourth Broken Realms book. Now they did kind of apologize about the fact that Broken Realms is a little bit delayed again due to COVID, Brexit, all that. And Techless is only up for pre-order next week, where I guess, in a similar situation, that book should have been out a while ago and not on top of the Lumineth Battle Tome, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But they showed off the title of Broken Realms 4, and it is called Kragnos. We got a very cryptic trailer just about something awakening that has been under a mountain and been asleep for a long time. It's woken up and all its people are gone. We don't know what it is. We don't know what Grand Alliance it's for, what sub-faction it's for. We've got a few theories. You know, it could be a beast man. It could be a Kernothi. It could be something Chaos Dwarven. It could be a Silent One. Or it could be something completely new. I don't think we've got a lot to go on at the minute, guys, have we?
No, we really don't know.
But any of the above, it'd be cool.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's not that far away. By the summer, hopefully, we should know exactly what it is. Based on the sort of 3-month window they tend to preview these things at. But it is interesting, like, when Broken Realms started, how we all sort of thought, oh, well, it's going to be the Elven Gods. Oh, it's going to be this, it's going to be that. But now, straight away, I mean, what? Will this be the fourth Broken Realms
book? That'll be the fourth one, yeah. Bellicor's three, and then this is four.
And we've got this brand new entity, which is taking centre stage, this Kragnos. It's not even, you know, I mean, when you look, you've got Alariel, Archaon even, Gork and Mork. There's so many cool things that Sigmar that we, you know, I would have thought they would have touched before they bring something brand new into the mix. So it surprised me.
Yeah, so that is interesting though, isn't it? Because Marathi and Teclis are about gods, and Book Four it does say it is a god that has awakened. Does that mean Bellicor is ascending to some kind of godhood, becoming a chaos god of mischief?
Based on precedent. For Bellicor's track record, and I'd say no. I'd say he almost gets there, and then something happens to stop him getting
there. I imagine it's going to go as well as the fight between Nagash and Teclis in Book 2 somehow. So, but yeah, excited. I guess we'll probably see some like images and models once the Grave Lords are out realistically.
I think if you look at there's almost like a graphic, isn't like a cartoon sort of, it's not really a video, is it? It's like an image that they sort of pan across, and this centaur type thing, which we're not sure what it is or what it could belong to. But the shield has appeared on a rumor engine. The detail on the shield you can see has been a previous rumor engine, and that rumor engine, I remember it has three dwarvish icons on it. Almost like the three dwarf gods, Grugni, Valea, and what's the other one? Grugni, Valea. Who's the other one, Dave? What's the combat-y one? God, there's a third dwarf god who likes fighting. Because Grugni was the maker, wasn't he? Anyway, it's like an axe, a hammer, and a staff. It's just weird. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, my speculation on that is that this shield is made from the stuff that's been in the ruins where it's come out of, so it could just be relics of the world that was, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing what it is, because I think we were chatting about this earlier, and it kind of, could this be maybe a character that comes out during this, and then when third edition, if third edition drops, we then get a full army release for whatever it is.
I was thinking as well that I wouldn't have thought they would release a brand new army in a Broken Realms book. So where we've got Bellicor coming out in Broken Realms Bellicor, and there may be some rules to muck about with demons and things like that, but it's not going to be a brand new battle tome there. It's going to just be, here, you can use Bellicor in this kind of army. I wonder whether he will be some sort of, because he's saying his people have all gone, so will he have an army? Will he be like a Mega Gargan, in that you can ally him to different battle tomes or different Grand Alliances? Maybe. And then the follow-up battle tomes will be sort of linked to that story somehow. So I don't know. Who knows at this point? We don't have long to find out.
No, it's there's lots of possibilities. You know, a cult could rise up to worship this god. Yeah. And there's lots of parts of the Mortal Realms that we haven't seen. So yeah, it's super cool. For Warhammer Underworld's Diachasm, we saw Kanan's Reapers, the Bone Reaper warband. These guys are a bit of all right, aren't they?
They're awesome. I really like this warband. And as cool as each of the sculpts are in this warband, Matt, do you know the one thing that stood out to me more than anything else? Is the flipping size of that main guy.
He's a big fella, isn't he?
He's huge.
Well, I mean, when you think about Bone Reapers, though, they are, even the regular line infantry is a construct, isn't it? So why couldn't they make him, like, you know, Dreadnought size? It makes sense.
Yeah, they're not reanimated skeletons, are they? They're just crafted from bone essence, then given a soul, aren't they?
They've just sort of twigged. Hang on a second. Why don't we just make our infantry three times bigger than everyone else's infantry?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. My favourite thing with this warband is the colour scheme for the main fella, though. I really like that black and grey colour for the Bone Reapers, because it looks more alien and unnatural, doesn't it?
It does. It has a hint of the crematoriums about them, which is one of the Bone Reapers
hosts,
sub-factions, yeah.
I was going to say, these warbands normally are aligned with a single sort of storm host, aren't they, equivalent?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder which ones these will be.
Yeah, so
it better not be null, whatever they call. Now I'm doing my tech list.
Yeah, So yeah, hopefully they're not too far off. And then after these, we've only got the Eidneth Deepkin, and then we seem to have rattled through this season super quickly. So I don't know if there's any more plans for, you know.
It does feel like that, but we've only obviously just had the Seraphon. We've still got the Savage Orcs to get released, which will probably be up April, I guess.
And the vampires next as well.
Oh, the vampires. So vampires April, Orcs May. These guys, June.
No, these guys are May. There's two in the same month to catch up with the release schedule.
Oh, right. Okay, fair enough.
And then June for the final one. So it just seems quicker than usual. I'm not complaining by any stretch. But I think the release was a bit staggered, where every quarter you'd get two warbands, where they wanted to have it coming out fairly regularly so people could pick up the warbands. I much prefer that release schedule myself. Because that's always been one of our complaints for games, where you've got to wait ages for the warband that you want to play with.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it's cool. Speaking of really cool, for Necromunda, we also saw the House of Faith again. We knew it was coming, and we knew there was new Redemptionists coming, but we got to see the models, and they are really cool, aren't they? You can't go wrong with nutcases, with shotguns, with underslung flamers, or eviscerators with underslung flamers, or flamers with underslung flamers. All the flames, basically. There's a guy holding a book. That isn't going to last very long, is it?
No, these guys really want to flame on. I like the guy with almost Cloud from Final Fantasy hair.
they're really cool. So the Redemptionists are the super, super over-the-top religious fanatics that even the rest of the corridors are like, he's a bit crazy, best stay away from him. To represent that, they can be taken as part of a corridor army, as kind of part of the psychotic religious fringes, or they can operate as their own warband, which is cool. Gives you, again, it's like the Slave Ogrins, isn't it? It gives you another new warband for Necromunda. So, yeah, really like the look of them, and I'll probably be picking some up and setting light to non-believers, because that seems like a good thing to do. We also saw something really cool as well, a new starter box for Necromunda called Hive War. So we had the old, what was it called, Necromunda Underhive box that came out probably 3 years ago now with the Eshes versus the Goliaths.
Yeah.
Which was a good box at the time. But obviously, it just had the kind of 2D tiles, didn't it? And it was the rule book in there was very much a cut down version of the full Necromunda rules, and some people didn't take to it too well. And obviously, they kind of revised that with a whole new edition, essentially, with Dark Uprising, adding the Zone Mortalis tiles. But that was a very expensive box. So we don't know how much this is. However, it looks like it is a set with a Escher gang, a Dalak gang, a set of the walls and pillars, and some boards to play on, along with all your dice and cards and templates and rulebook. If this is priced, I don't know, 60, 70 quid in lines with other kind of small starter boxes, I think that'd be a really good way of getting into Necromunda, especially that it's got the full rulebook in there as well.
Yeah, I think it's a really nice box. I wouldn't mind, a handful of Zone Mortalis scenery, so... it's quite tempting. I quite like the Dalak as well. They're quite a nice little warband.
Yeah, I mean the good thing with this is obviously there's lots of weapon options in Necromunda, and I'm thinking, oh, I could get another set of Eshers and use some of the Forge World upgrades. Same with the Dalak, and then Zone Mortalis scenery is always good. And worst case, stick the rulebook on eBay. So yeah, I think it depends on how it's priced. If it is in that £60-70 bracket, I think this will be a good buy for anyone into Necromunda. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if it's close to the £100, then that's less of a value, but just kind of working out what the contents are, I think it's going to be more on that slightly lower end, maybe. Mm. Again, could be wrong, though. Who knows? But yeah, it looks pretty cool. And then we got some 40k reveals. And first up, we saw the Skitarii Marshal, previously mentioned in the Warzone book.
Yeah.
For the Adeptus Mechanicus. And he's pretty cool. We've seen him teased a long time ago as well, haven't we?
Yeah, he's been in a couple of... the latest one was the New Year teaser, which was the same shots as the teaser we'd seen, like maybe, I think, when 9th edition launched. So what was that? July last year? June, July last year? So he's been a bit of a long time coming. But I really like how kind of Roman, kind of military-looking he is. I know he has split some opinions online, though, within the Adeptus Mechanicus groups. But I'm quite a big fan of him. I think it's a really nice model.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a Gladius and a Roman Legionnaire style kind of crest on his head, hasn't he? I quite like that.
Like a Space Marine helmet, I thought, yeah.
Yeah. So he's cool. The big news, though, was the new Adeptus Mechanicus Codex coming out, and the trailer in binary at the end said April, so we've not got long to wait. Now, what really interested me was the front cover, because every Games Workshop battle tome or codex, the front cover only shows stuff that is models. If you've got an example, send them in, but I don't think there's any example of artwork on a front cover that isn't represented in miniature form. And this book seems to show a few new units on the front cover.
Yeah, I don't know if it was me, because we were having a bit of a debate, but we were having a conversation about this in our little private sort of Sprues and Brews group. And I don't know if it's because we had so much new content for the Adeptus Mechanicus with Psychic Awakening that I almost refuse to believe we could be getting even more new stuff. But I think your argument is quite a strong one, Matt. And if it is the case, then oh boy.
Well, on the left-hand side of the cover, we've got what looked to be Elite Skitarii Honor Guard. Now, in the Warzone book, there's talk of Specialist Anti-Demon Skitarii that obviously we've got no models to represent. So could this be something, especially if this is set during the period of this invasion of Metallica as well? Also on the front cover, we seem to see some kind of maybe HQ unit, potentially the size of a small super heavy tank. Now, I'm sure earlier in the show we read a description about something that seems to fit the bill, festooned with mechandrites and all sorts of gribbly arms and stuff. I'm fairly certain that is a fabricated general on the front cover.
Well, I mean, if you look at, like, we've had the Silent King, Katakros, the Slaanesh character, like almost like mini dioramas, and I can imagine a fabricate a general model with like an attendant of, you know, all these sort of honor guard and things like that around him as well on the same sort of base.
Absolutely, and looking at the picture, I think you're gonna have fun painting that, Dave. Sub assemblies might be the way to go on this fella.
Pushing those new painting skills to the limit. Yeah, definitely. But I would very much like the challenge. I think it could be a really, really fun build.
Yeah, so again, they did mention that we have got another preview seminar coming soon. So again, I think obviously there's a lot of stuff in the next few weeks, the Lumineth and Cursed City, that once that's out of the way, I think we might see if there are any new models, and I highly suspect that there are, that we'll see them in that next preview show. So yeah, definitely interested to see what's happening in April, which isn't long away. Only a few weeks, Dave.
I know. Can't wait. Bring on that Crusade content.
Speaking of religious fanatics, though, the Adeptus Sororitas have also got a brand new vehicle in the form of the Castigator, and I really like this tank. It's essentially a slightly uglier Predator, more militant, isn't it? Which still sounds weird that I like the fact that it's a bit boxy, but it kind of fits it. Yes, it's festooned with all kind of trinkets and reliquies and all kinds of stuff, but it's like a big slab of a tank that's been churned out just for shooting things, as opposed to, you know, we've got lots of grav tanks and stuff for the Space Marines now. I quite like that it is using essentially a really old school Heresy era Rhino chassis with a big chunky battle cannon on the top.
It's something that the Sisters have lacked, isn't it?
I mean, the traditionally your Sister's army's got lots of multi-melters. It'll be nice to have a battle cannon, or it looks like there's a twin auto cannon build on it as well, to give them another form of kind of anti-tank, I guess, an anti-horde.
Yeah, give you some options. And I also liked how when Adam mentioned on the stream that on this particular tank that you haven't got the flames in the what are they called,
the brazier things, yeah.
Yeah, but you can swap them with the ones that are flaming from the other tanks, so you can mix and match them a little bit if you wanted.
Yeah, I quite like that from a narrative standpoint as well. The faster vehicles, they're still all burning away, where this thing's trundling up the rear, and maybe the flames have gone down by the time it hits the front lines.
Been looted by redemptionists.
Yeah, maybe. They'd love this thing. They'd have a field day with that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a really gorgeous tank. Obviously, we've seen a couple of other kits come in with the sisters, so presumably these will come after the Adeptus Mechanicus, and I suspect we might see a couple more new kits for them as well, which surprises me because, you know, we've been saying recently that often you might just get a Codex or Codex and a single character model. It seems that they're definitely ramping up the releases now, and that is probably part of the reason why we've had a couple of quiet months, just so they can start building up the stock in the warehouse and getting the factories up and running again.
Gives me hope for Craft World Eldar.
Yeah, wow. If there's anything like these, then hopefully we get a full new wave for them. Speaking of new stuff for armies, though, there was another 40k reveal just at the end of the show, starting with a trailer about the Beast Snaggers, a new sub-faction of orcs who they shy away from vehicles and technology. And if you think savage orcs for 40k, that doesn't seem too far from the mark. Now, there's lots of things in the trailer that tease at new models, but they did actually show us one new model. And it was a squig hog, they called it.
Yeah.
And I think Adam best described it on the stream as a combination of a pig, a squig, and a shark.
Yes.
A very angry squig ridden by an orc with a grot hanging on for dear life. And it's a beautiful thing.
Oh, God. It's so awesome. Like, my first feelings was, do I somehow get this as like a gore grunter conversion?
Yeah, that'd be really good, actually.
For the Auric War Clans. But then I thought, I'd probably just end up building the 40k army on them. Because the orcs are eggs.
Have you ever seen John Carter from Mars? It reminds me of the thing that runs around in that.
Yeah.
Very weird. I really like, obviously, Boar Boys were a thing back in second edition. And I kind of, that could have just easily been a gore grunt with an orc with a gun on top. The fact that they've done something different really excites me, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it could be a very interesting sort of sub-faction to the orcs. The concept art, like what we saw in the trailer. Yeah. I'm really excited for what we're going to see from this.
It's a very stylized, like, cave warlock picture. Stuff that looks like new models. We've got the squig riders. There's what looks like a chariot pulled by a squig with a big gun on the back of it. There's also a couple of shots of a boss in mega armor, one of which has got a grot gunner on his shoulder and another one with a targeting squig on his shoulder as a more kind of savage version. There are shots of boys and stuff, and it wouldn't surprise me if they recut a boy sprue maybe with parts to make them more savage.
Well, what I noticed about the orcs in this trailer is I know we're thinking maybe savage orcs, but a lot of them have sort of augmented limbs, robot arms, robot
cyborgs.
Legs.
That's something we've not seen since second. And again, we've said in the past, a real thing at the minute is kind of bringing back those things from early editions of the games that haven't had models for a long time.
And I think another big takeaway from this, and I think it's a reason for Jay to be really excited, is that we've got orcs on, like, these squig beasts up against, like, tanks and stuff. That this is completely opening the door to dinosaur, Eldar, fighting tanks.
Yeah, I would love to see, you know, we've been saying we'd love new Aspect Warriors for Eldar. If they did a similar thing and brought out a book, but just had some Exodite units in the book, maybe that could potentially be how they go.
We shall see. So yeah, it was all in all a very tasty preview, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. It was. I mean, we've been spoiled for previews recently, haven't we? And the last few have been really excellent, I think. They said that the next one is going to be even bigger, though. So it was. I'm trying to work out when we first saw signs of the new edition of 40k. I think we're probably a little bit early in comparison to when we saw it last year. I think it was closer to the summer, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, there's all sorts. If there's a Sisters and Mechanicus, and Orcs as well, ranges of models to come out, you know, let alone all the Age of Sigmar stuff, I think we're going to be in for a treat this year.
Yeah, definitely. And on that note, I think we best pick out our top three models from the preview as we're nearing the end of the podcast. So let's move quickly onto this week's top three. And so it is time for us to pick out our top three models from the last Warhammer Online preview. And this was a difficult one. Matt, do you want to start us off with your third choice?
Well, it's got to be shotguns for the Underslung Flamers, hasn't it? The Redemptionists, I thought they looked really, really ace. And yeah, I can't wait to set light to everything within the Underhive with them.
Yeah, they're really cool. they don't care much for health and safety, but they are very, very cool.
They did touch upon in the preview as well how you could use these models in other forces, so like in a Sisters of Battle army as like a Munitorum priest, in Imperial Guard army and stuff like that. So I think they've got a lot of use outside of Necromunda, actually.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Jay, what is your third choice?
So I'm cheating a little bit because none of mine are actual models. They're sort of like hints at potential models.
It's the preview. It's all fair game.
It was in the preview, yeah. So my first one was from the orc video we saw. So obviously that lovely squig shark pig thing. But I really like the look of the war boss. It looked like there were two war bosses. One, as you said, Matt, had like a little grot gunner on his shoulder, reminiscent of the war boss from Warhammer. The MMO Age of Reckoning limited edition promo model you got, but I really love the one at the front, the end of the video, sort of leading all the orcs from the front with like the, it's got a skull of some sort of beast on his shoulder, a massive big like sword, looks like it's made out of the lower jaw of some sort of beast, and a little squig. A squig with a stubber on top of his shoulder.
Yeah, targeting squig. We've seen them before, wired into vehicles because they're more accurate than the orcs.
That's so cool. Yeah, I hope this model's like rivals Gazgul in scale and epicness.
Excellent. My third choice was from the Gravelords, and it's almost a tie. I nearly said the new zombies, but then I looked back at the Blood Knights and thought, nah, it's got to be the Blood Knights. They are incredible miniatures. They look pretty big as well. These are going to be chunky knights. And I'll tell you what really swung it for me, that molded banner that the banner bearers got.
Nice. You know what? It's a little thing, but even the lances with the pennants and stuff all molded and blowing in the wind, they look so good, these models.
Yeah. I really like lances. Sometimes you see a lance on like a mounted on a cavalry unit, they just look like really, really thin spears. Whereas those lances are so chunky, they actually look like they could smash right through some plate armor.
It's funny, but these are like the closest we've had to Bretonian knights in Age of Sigmar, aren't they?
Yeah.
We're round to our second choices. Matt, what is your second choice?
Well, yeah, pig, squig, shark. It's got to be the Squig Hog Rider. Just for if you made us kind of come up with a list of things that we might see on the preview, that was never going to be on there, was it?
No,
not in a million years. It's I really like that it's a new concept, obviously based on boar boys, but squig pig thing over a boar any day.
Yeah, incredible model. Jay, who was next? It was it was you, Jay. What was your second choice?
I'll go next. So the next could be model that I liked from the preview was on the front cover of the Adeptus Mechanicus Codex, which was that we're guessing based on Matt's sort of investigation in the Caradon book that it's the Fabricator General model. And judging by the detail on that picture, it's going to be a huge. I'm expecting a Silent King style model here. I mean, the Adeptus Mechanicus stuff is already really, really cool. Is it, what's his name? Who's the current special? Call, is it?
Call, yeah. Belisarius Call.
Yeah, he's such a cool model. But, I mean, this looks even better and bigger than him.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a key point that again, Dave mentioned on our little chat the other day, that the Belisarius Call turned down the role of Fabricator General, which presumably means Mars has got a Fabricator General.
He didn't turn it down. He wanted it, but Gulliman said no.
Okay.
Yeah, Gulliman turned him down because he's got some mistrust in Call, and he thinks it would cause a civil war because there's quite a few on Mars that don't like Call's methods. So yeah, no, he wasn't. He was denied the job.
So Gulliman being the straight laced type could put a fabricator general in charge and obviously ruffle some feathers with Belisarius Core, which would be interesting from a lore standpoint as well.
Core goes into the Dark Mechanicum.
Sounds like heresy. So my second choice is the same as Matt's. It had to be the Squig Rider for the Beast Snaggers. Not only is this model amazing, but I think the range could be absolutely... It could be what tips me over to the Orcs and to make a little army of them, because I think they're going to be awesome. The character of that grot hanging off the back, amazing. Can't wait. See,
even if they don't redo the boys, which they should do because it's quite an old kit, but if they didn't, you could easily kit bash up some more feral looking 40k Orcs by using a combination of the Savage Orcs from AOS and the various weapons that come on the current boys kit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. We are round to our top choices. So, Matt, what is yours?
Well, you mentioned it earlier in the show. It is the Blood Knights. They are absolutely stunning models. I mean, the old ones were nice for the time, but they have dated a little bit. These are just so dynamic. Now, I have put in a cheeky kind of 1.5mm list, because she was shown off today. It is Annika. The upcoming vampire, the Thirsting Blade, just because she is so weird and freaky looking, and I love it.
She's going to give me nightmares tonight. Definitely.
It'd be cool if they can build some sort of like Court of the Archon type unit as well, because she just looks like she's like one of a few sort of vampires running the place, if you know what I mean. She doesn't...
Yeah.
Like, almost like a political sort of scheming type character rather than an out and out combat character, although I suspect she's just as deadly in combat as well, being a vampire.
Has anyone played the Resident Evil Village demo yet?
No.
She kind of reminds me of the tall, freaky vampire lady out of that.
Yeah, I think I haven't played it, but I've seen like screenshots and stuff, so I think I can get where you're coming from there. Jay, what is your top choice?
So my top choice, and it's the most unexpected for me. I mean, the Orcs I wasn't expecting to see any Orcs as well, to be fair. But it was from the Kragnos reveal, and it was that centaur thing. And it's just, what is it? It's just got me thinking ever since I saw it on Saturday of all the different possibilities it could be. I mean, it looks like a Kenofi at first glance. You'd say, oh, that's just like the Kenofi centaur from the Underworld Warband. But then you look closer, it doesn't really share, apart from the fact that it's a centaur with like a mane and whatnot, it doesn't share any other similarities with the warband we've seen for the Kenofi so far. Then you've got this, who's Kragnos? What faction is he going to be aligned to? What were his people? That's what's excited me the most from that preview.
Yeah, I like this when it's unknown. We had similar with the Osteotic Bone Reapers, didn't we? Because we had a similar situation where there was a new character unveiled and it was Catacross in the end.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, that was it, because he was from one of the Storm Vaults, wasn't he?
Mm. Mm.
It's an interesting one. I like in this like age of spoilers and potato scam stuff, we've got absolutely no idea who this guy is, where he's from, you know, who he factions with. It's great. Can't wait to find out more. To round out our top threes, my top choice is cheating slightly, but it's a combination of Codex Adeptus Mechanicus and the new Marshal. I'm trying my hardest not to get too excited about the fact that this range could be expanded even further. I already have quite a sizable Adeptus Mechanicus army. I definitely see it getting even larger. It's definitely fired me up to get back painting some Skitarii units that I've not quite finished yet. I'm really excited by the Crusade content. On the article, it mentions creating strange new artifacts. Oh, I mean, that just sounds awesome.
That's cool, isn't it?
that's going to be so good. So we'll see. And like you say, Matt, not far away either, April. So that's just around the corner. So we'll soon see. So yeah, there are choices. And we do have one final segment of the podcast left to record. And that is the community top three. And that is coming up next. Before we close off another episode of the Sprues and Brews podcast, there is, of course, time for the community top three picks. So what did you like from the Warhammer Online preview? Over on Facebook, Simon Nichols, third choice, Death Rattle Skeletons. His second choice was the Blood Knights. And his top choice was the Sisters Castigator. Definitely getting one for my Order of the Bloody Rose Army. Yeah, super cool tank. Chris Aldersey, his third choice. I think there's a lot of Blood Knights fans across social media. His second choice was the Death Rattle Skeletons, and his top choice was the Redemptionists. Mike Lodes, third choice, Orc Squig Cavalry. If this is a whole new range, then I am in. Me too. His second choice was the New Zombies, combined with the Cursed City Box. I'm 100% doing Soul Blight. And his top choice was the Blood Knights. These are pure joy. But he does give an honourable mention to Kragnos. Can't wait to see what this is. And finally on Facebook, Josh Upton. His third choice is the new Necromunda starter set. It's severely tempting him to dive into the Underhive. You really should. It's really fun. His second choice is the Admex Codec cover art. It's by far my favourite of all codices for Knives so far. And probably one of my favourites of all time. Yeah, it is a very nice piece of art. And his top choice in capitals, of course, Orcs riding squigs. I'd originally planned on not buying any more orcs after I got my last few models painted to complete my army, but I can't not get these when they're released. Wah! Matt, what have we got on Twitter?
Well, over on Twitter, we've got from Simon. The Blood Knights, love the old ones and bought them when they first released all them years ago. I love the Dragon Knight aesthetic of the mounts too. Looking forward to building an old school vampire-led undead army like back in the day. Yeah, absolutely, me too. Fabius Fulgrim, the Squig, the Sisters Predator and the Skeletons. Wild West Wargaming says new Skeletons, Blood Knights and Redemptionists for the Emperor. Anonymous Rex says the Orc Squig Rider, new Felbats, and Mr. Kanan and the boys. Nevermore says new Skeletons. I love those sculpts. The new Necromunda starter box where I can dive into the Underhive and the Ossiarch Bone Reapers Underworld Warband. Average Paints, Blood Knights. Also applies to last week's models that make you start a new army. Yeah. The Necromunda Redemptionists, and technically not a new model, but potential of new Renegades and Heretics, as shown in the Sister trailer. Yeah, I didn't even mention that in the little trailer that they played before the reveal of the tank. There are what are clearly new designs for some Traitor Guardsmen. And they also, I can't remember what the name is, but they are name checked in the Warzone book as well. So hopefully they're a unit in a new Chaos Space Marine codex. Vincent Notley has got the Castigator tank, the new Skeletons, and Kragnos looking all mysterious on a hill. Claude says Blood Knights, Skeletons, and Squig Rider. Ricky Smith just says Pig Squigs. Red Tooth says Orc riding a Pig Squig, Grot riding a Pig Squig, and a Pig Squig. Consensus theme there. Darren Winter said Blood Knights, Redemptionists, and updated Skellies. Devin says the Castigator three times. Fair enough. Luke says Squiggy Piggies and a chariot being pulled by them. Andy Wood says Blood Knights, Fell Bats, and the Bone Reaper Warband. The Painter of Devil says, I'm going to voice a potentially unpopular opinion, guided primarily by the fact that I'm old and was there at all their previous incarnations, the Fell Bats. I think that's a fair point, Painter of Devils. But the old Fell Bats do not look good with the kind of piggy faces, and not in a squiggy piggy way. They look really bad. So yeah, the new ones look ace. As are the Slavic Skeleton Warriors and the Redemptionists. And finally, Painting for My Sanity says Redemptionists, Castigator, and Redemptionists again.
Excellent. I'm going to have to name this episode Squiggy Piggies, aren't I?
Squiggy Piggies is the name, of the episode,
I think. Yeah, definitely. A nice, very choice there as well. Bit of something for everybody. What is next week's top three, Matt?
So next week, we've got one that we've done in the past, but, you know, things change. And obviously, we've got Warhammer Quest Curse City on the horizon. So what old Games Workshop games would you like to see redone with an awesome new plastic box?
Excellent. You can get your choices in via social media, facebook.com/spruceandbrews, or you can tweet to us at spruceandbrews over on the Twitter. Guys, that brings us to quite a full episode. I think that could potentially be one of our longest ones yet.
It's a chonker of a squiggy piggy, isn't it?
It is indeed. So until next time, have a great week of hobby. We'll be back again next week. Same time, same channel. And we'll speak to you all again very soon. Bye.
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 Thanks for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. For more content, remember to check out spruesandbrews.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, send us a tweet at spruesandbrews or head over to facebook.com/spruesandbrews.